Esther. Rambam writes in Hilchot Taniot, Perek Hey. First part of Hilchot Taniot, the Rambam deals with Taniot that are a response to something happening in the present. There isn't rain, there's a war, Chas V'Shalom, etc. Rambam in Perek Hey gets to Taniot that are commemorative of the past. And he gives us a very important direction as to what the goal of such Taniot are. Because a Taniot happening because something in the present we understand very well. If there isn't rain, Chas V'Shalom or other tzaros, it's because God is trying to send us a message and we need to reflect on it. But what's a Taniot about something that happened in the past? How could there be a message in that for us? It's in the past. So the Rambam says that there are yamim shekol Yisrael mitanim behem mitnei hatzarot she'iru behem kedei le'orer halevavos v'liftoach darkei tshuva. The Rambam says these Taniot also are to awaken us and open the paths of tshuva. V'yihyeh zeh zikaron lema'aseinu haroim u'ma'ase avoteinu shehoya kima'aseinu atah ad shegaram lahem v'lanu otan hatzarot. The Rambam relates to our question by saying that by remembering what our ancestors did wrong and what they suffered because of it, we can learn for ourselves because we're obviously making the same mistakes if we're suffering the same fates. Meaning, if the Beit Mikdash hasn't yet been rebuilt, it's because the same problems that led to its destruction still exist. If whatever happened in the past that we're commemorating today is still being commemorated, it's because it's still relevant. The message is still relevant. And this, I think, is, as I said, very important direction for us on a Taniot to reflect on. Again, it's not just people think it's some kind of, you know, suffering. Okay, I don't eat, so woe is to me, and I feel terrible, and you know, some kind of, you know, kapara, and like, it's feel a zaka, and my fat's burning off, so all the sins I did should burn off, and, you know. It's meant to be to reflect on whatever was done wrong in the past that led to the negative results in the past and how it's still here today and how we need to repair it. So now the question to look at each Taniot is, you know, what that is. What's unique about Taniot Esther is the fact that it's, you know, abuts Purim, that it's right before Purim. Now, you know, we have Tzom Gedalia, which is right after Rosh Hashanah. But here it's even stranger because Esther didn't, no one fasted at this point, and the events, the Chor didn't happen. Esther fasted, Esther fasted, but when did she fast? It was Pesach. It was Pesach time when she fasted. The fact that we fast now seems to imply that this is connected to Purim. And this explains the unique status of Yom Yud Gimel. As we know from the very beginning of Maseches Megillah, it is a preferred days of Kriyas, for Kriyas HaMegillah if we're not leaning on Yudalit or Tesvav. The Gemara says that we need a special limud to learn out Yud Aleph and Yud Bet, but we don't need a limud for Yud Gimel. It is Zman Kehila Lakolhi. Zman Kehila Lakolhi. Whatever that means, and we'll talk about it in a second, you already see it has a special status. And we see this also from the Girsa that the Baal HaMor and others had in the Tosefta about someone going off in a caravan on a boat, Hayotzin b'shiara, u'mefarshin b'svina, korin b'arba'asar. That's the Girsa we have, which means you're not in a city, you're not in a walled city, the norm is to read on the 14th. But the Girsa of the Baal HaMor, next source is, ha'mefarsh v'ayotzi l'derech korin b'yud gimel. And the Baal HaMor explains, name for Rabbeinu Ephraim, that what it means is that if you're about to go on a trip, and you won't be able to read on Yud Dalet, you're allowed to read already on Yud Gimel. Yud Gimel is a day when you can read the Megillah Me'ikar Adin. And the explanations given for why Yud Gimel is special is all about its connection to Purim, both connected to Purim. If you take a look at the Rush, on the bottom of page 1, he gives two explanations. The first, Zman Kehila, he says, is Zman Milchama. If you look at the Pesukim on page 2, we all know that that's when the Yudim Nikhalu, right, Hayudim Barayhem Bachomidinot Anel Chashveyosh, Slochem, Shera Atam, Zman Kihila, when they fought the war, so it's commemorating the war. Or the later pshat that the Rush quotes in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that Zman Kihila means when they gathered to fast. When they gathered to fast. They had to fight a war eventually, but it began with fasting in anticipation of it. Looking again at page 2, Megillat Esther, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Lech knos et kol ha'yudim anitzim b'shushan ha'birah v'tzumu alai. The coming together to fight the coming together to fast, the coming together in and of itself, was part of the tikkun for what Haman described as the Am Echad Mefuzar Umefurad. And of course, we commemorate this in Shoshanas Yachad, where we say, not only Tzalav Samecha Virosum Tcheles Mordechai, but Tzalav Samecha Virotam Yachad Tchelet Mordechai, which connects, of course, the Makor and Dvarim Perek Lamed Gimel, Vahi Bishur and Melech Besasef Rashayam, Yachad Shifte Israel, which gets commemorated in the Yachad Kulam Kedusha L'Chayish Aleishu. The coming together and the togetherness is an important part of this day. And this expresses itself in the explanation the Rishonim give for the uniqueness of fasting on an Erev Yom Tov. Right? Yom Tov, especially the Megillas Taanios Yom Tov, have implications for the day before as well. The Lola Misbidbon, Lolas Hanos, the day before as well. And therefore it's really unique, singular, that we fast on Erev Purim. If you look at the bottom of page 2, the Kolbo explains that the only Tainus that's Aser is a Tainus of Tsar. Purim is not, Tainus Esther is not a Tainus of Tsar, it's Zecher the Tainus Esther. The Rosh formulates this even more strongly, the source before. Bottom of page 3, he says, Zman kehil lakoli shenikalu v'amdu al nafshon l'melchamo bikshu rachamim v'gam hu me'ikar anes. It's part of what we're celebrating. That's part of the Ikar anes. And so what we're commemorating is not a day of Tsar, and it can be on Erev Purim as well. The maskana of all this is that Tanis Esther is part of the framework of Purim. It's not Purim, Tanis Esther. I mean, Tzom Gedalia is not connected to Rosh Hashanah. But Tanis Esther is part of the framework of Purim, and that's why it's not a kasha. How can we fast on Erev Purim? It's Mikra Nes is part of Purim. And I think the way I would explain it is using the famous Tikkuni Zohar on the bottom of page 2, which connects Purim to Yom Kippur, right? Yom Kippur is like Purim. They're similar in that there's a Simcha on Yom Kippur as well. Right? There's a Simcha on Yom Kippur. We're celebrating Slicha Mechila. But obviously it's a day of Cheshbon HaNefesh, a day of reflection. Purim also has these two sides. We celebrate God's miracles, but we should be reflecting about why a miracle was necessary in the first place. What did we do wrong that led to the fact that we were threatened with extermination? That's why Purim and Yom Kippur are similar in that they're both frameworks of 2 days, one of which we celebrate as a Yom Tov, the other of which we fast and reflect. The difference, of course, is the order and the focus, and that's why it's only Ke. And of course, the modern day parallel to this is Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut, right? L'Havdil, but clearly they were built off it, of the reflection and celebration that come together when we deal with days that require reflection and not just celebration. And so the avoda of Tanis Esther is to reflect on what led to the Gzeira and what we need to be metaken. And as we'll see, part of what we celebrate on Purim is whatever reflection needed to happen then needs to happen today so we can celebrate properly on Purim. It's very interesting when you are in Yerushalayim, right? For many of you, it's the first year you're doing Purim. For some of you, it's the second year. You know, by next year, for some of you, it'll be the third year, right? Where you have Purim this way, where there's a day of separation between the reflection and the celebration. And the significance of that is that it gives us even more time to think about how to apply these ideas properly. So, if we turn to page 3, I believe the most important Gemara for this conversation appears in Megillah Daf Yud Beis, where the Talmidim Rav Shimon Bar Yochai themselves ask Rav Shimon Bar Yochai why the Jews were threatened with extermination in that generation. Shalu Talmidim is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, Mipnei ma nitchayvu soneim shel Yisrael shebaoso hador kliya. Why were they threatened with extermination? Amru lahem, Amar lahem, Imru atem, you tell me. Which is a very interesting response. And I assume he responded that way because he believed that they could come up with an explanation or they should try and think about the explanation. Amrulo mipneishenenu misudaso shalosa rasha. Their response was because the Jews joined the party. He responded and said, "Imkain shebishushan yehargu shebchol and kula yehargu." The Jews of Shushan should be punished. Why were the Jews around the world threatened with extermination? Amrulo emorata. Okay, that's why we asked you. Amar lahem mipneishenestachavu letzelim. Because they bowed down to Avodah Zarah. Rashi says already in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. Interesting that they would be punished only now. If that's why they were punished, why did God let them off the hook? Was he being extra fair to them, extra nice to them? They didn't really mean it when they bowed down, and God didn't really mean it when he would threaten them with extermination. Huh? What's pshat? Now, of course, methodologically, the question one needs to ask in a Gemara like this is, especially where Rav Shimon Yochai asked them to give the explanation, is the maskana replacing the Havamina fully, or is the Havamina still on the table? Meaning, what's the reason they were threatened extermination? Only the Tzelem, or also the Tzelem? Rashi, on Megillas Esther, writes, Rashi holds it's both. And Rashi emphasizes here the generational issue, right? There's a generational flow. And obviously the question is, what's the relationship between these two factors? Is it just some kind of quantitative, straw that broke the camel's back? Or is it more than that? And especially the fact that it's different generations, you wonder how the two ideas relate to each other. So what I'd like to talk to you about today, and I believe this is what one should be reflecting on in Tanit Esther, is each of these mistakes, chatoim, their significance, and what they should lead us to reflect upon. So that's what we're going to talk about. Anyone not interested? It's a good time to, do whatever you want to do. But let's talk about this. Okay. So let's start with Nenu Misudaso Shaloso Arasha. And the obvious question is, as the Gemara says in Megillah Daf Yud Beis, it was kosher food, right? It was Kedash Shel Torah, Miyein Midinaso, Ein Ones B'Yayin Nesach, as the Medrash says. So what was the problem? So I believe one can and should talk about two different issues here. The first is the more famous one, but even regarding that famous one, we have to better appreciate it. And the second is the less famous one, and more subtle one, but very, very important, and I think something the Gemara is intimating to. The first is the fact that we know that the Suda used the Klei HaMikdash. More than that, may have been to celebrate the belief that the Churban was final. And obviously a Suda like that would be very problematic for the Jewish people to take part in. And the sources for this we have in the Gemara and Megillah, the Medrash, all both in the bottom of page 3. But I'd like to focus upon page 4, where the Beis Yosef in his Sefer Magid Meisharin tells us something much deeper, which is an extension of what I think people are more famous with. For those not familiar, the Magid Meisharim is a sefer the Beis Yosef wrote based on conversations he had with his Magid. No relation with Pesach, every relation with God. Had an angel who would come learn with him. The Magid Meisharim of the Beis Yosef. And he talks about there how benefiting from the Suda of Achashverosh was benefiting from the Sitra Achra. And I want to explain what this means in English. Okay, as opposed to, Kabbalistic language. Let's say the Suda wasn't to celebrate the Churban. Let's say it was to celebrate the victory of the Persians over the Greeks. Some people say, right? Whatever it was. It wasn't to celebrate something that was Jewish. And I think what the Magid Meisharim of the Beis Yosef says, he says at the end, very end of the piece, V'hainu taima da'amu rabbanin Yisrael shebechutz lo etzov de'avar zar b'tarayin. When Jews celebrate, whatever it is the goyim around them are celebrating, what does that mean about who they are? Let's say a person lives in New York, okay, and a nice goloi happens, the Knicks win a championship. Mamish, and one would say, obviously that's a nice, if you know anything about the Knicks history. I'm not choosing the nice. Rangers winning is not a nice goloi. It'd be a surprise, but it's not an ace goalie. The Knicks win is an ace goalie. The Nets winning would also be an ace goalie. But now, Mishana Mokka, Mishana Mazel, we can understand that maybe they could win in Brooklyn. But the Knicks, an ace goalie. A person celebrates the Knicks' victories. They make a party, goes and celebrates together with the goalie. What does that mean? It means their simcha is his simcha. His simcha is their simcha. What he's happy about is what they're happy about. Where's the identity of what you really, really want to celebrate? And again, it's the flip side of the celebrating the Churban. Maybe we're not celebrating the Churban. We're not taking part in that. We're not going to that party. But we can celebrate whatever else we're celebrating about the Persian monarchy's success. So again, if a person wants to celebrate the fact that the United States has independence, July 4th, right? The United States has been a country that's given independence to the Jewish people and helped the Jewish religion grow and etc. Okay, yes, with that, Masha, right? But where we identify with whatever the goyim are identifying, our simcha is purely whatever they're happy about. That's what the Beis Yosef means on a Kabbalistic level when he's talking about, the connection to this sitra achra, to this other direction. The second point, though, is meduyik in the Gemara. If you go back to page 3 again, Shenenu misuda sosa arasha. It wasn't just taking part in the suda, it was enjoying it. Now, what do I mean by that? If you take a look at the bottom of page 4, the Gilat Esther Perek Aleph, where it describes the suda in real great detail, and it talks about this lavish feast that no lavish feast in our generation could possibly compare to, and I'll explain why. How long was the suda for the people of Shushan? 180 days. Let me translate that for you. A half a year. A Chorev Zman with Adar Sheni. They didn't even have Bina Zman in the last month. The point I'm trying to explain is hedonism, baby. This is about pleasure for the pursuit of pleasure. Now let's imagine a suda. You go out, you get yourself your best steak, and if you like wine, you drink wine, whatever it is, da-da-da-da. You're done, right? 179 days? More? If it said Yeshiva Bachar went to the meal, I would say, okay, it's Yeshiva Bachar, we can't ask kashas, right? But it was Balabatim. 180 days? It's a certain culture. Or you look later in Pasuk Chet, bottom of page 4, Vashtiyakadat inones kichen yisara melech al kol rav beito lasot kirtzon ishvish. This is 21st century Western world, right? Everybody gets whatever it is they want. The pursuit of pleasure. The pursuit of pleasure. And, you know, here there's a very important idea. Judaism is not against pleasure. Judaism is against the focus on pleasure. People thinking life is about pleasure. If we parallel this to the United States, right, where the Constitution says the goal is the pursuit of happiness. First of all, we believe in higher pursuits. Number two, we know that people who pursue happiness as their goal will never be happy. Because human beings are programmed to want more than just happiness. And when we degrade it all into just the pursuit of happiness, that's when things go wrong. And that's why things went wrong at this Mishnah of Achashverosh. So, Shenanu Misudaso Shel Osar Rosh, if you put the whole thing together, is to what extent had the Jewish people become part of the culture they were part of? Even if they were eating kosher. An interesting thing, not to parallel in any way, I have a Talmud who now is old enough that he has a son who went to the yeshiva here, who told me the following story. He worked at that time, I don't know if he still does, for Bankers Trust. Now, Bankers Trust has a lot of Jews, had, and I think still has a lot of Jews who work for them. I think like most financial companies. But they also have an up, very high-level executive who is a religious Jew. So he went, this guy, my Talmud, to the party, to the holiday party. It's not a Christmas holiday party. They do it in a holiday party, okay. And he's looking for the kosher section. You know, wants to eat something. The food looks great, but he's looking for the kosher section. He looked and looked the whole party. Couldn't find the kosher section. At the very end of the party, the executive vice president comes over and says, "Hey, did you enjoy the food?" Because the food, I couldn't find the kosher section. And he starts laughing. He goes, "The whole thing was kosher. The whole thing was kosher. Ad kedei kach." You understand what I mean? The whole thing, Bankers Trust, was kosher. Ashreinu. Right? How lucky we are that we're in a world that's coming along, that's, you know, taking into account our needs. But there's a danger there too, right? The degree that you identify fully with whatever the world around you identifies with, that your values become the values of the world around you, that maybe your values mean less because your values are the values of the world around you that don't necessarily mean very much. So this is issue number one. And definitely something we can understand very well in those days and in our days. We can understand very, very well in our days. It's sad that there are people who are not religious. It's sad. It's sad that there are Jews who are assimilated. It's sad. But maybe it's a different kind of sad when Jews who are religious have their values blurred. And I don't just mean that a person is religious and doesn't learn Torah because they don't understand the Torah anymore. How about a guy who's religious and learns Torah and keeps halacha and ala milas, but the values have become blurred. Now, by the way, I want to be crystal schmissel clear. Is it us to watch sports? No. Is it us to enjoy sports? No. Is it us to be happy when your team wins? No. Is it wrong that this is your celebration for 180 days? Yeah. And this is something very important we need to reflect upon. The next question then is, so how does this connect to Ishtachavu Letzelem? Because if you saw, this reason would only explain Shushan, right? And as we saw from Rashi, the two are connected. So let's turn now to page 5. And let's try and explain this by asking a very important question. The Jews bowed down to Nebuchadnezzar. Because they thought he was God? No. Because they were threatened with death. And the Rambam writes, it was based on the Gemara, that a person who bows down, me'avo or me'ir, a putter. A person who bows down because they love it, not that anything about Azar, but they love it, or they're afraid they're going to get in trouble, right? That's not real Avodah Zarah. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but it's not something that should be punishable with death. So the truth is, we already saw earlier that they asked Rishon Bayochai, so why did God let them off the hook? And what did he say? He already said, they didn't mean it. God also didn't mean it. Let's try. You make believe, I make believe, we're all making believe. So I think the answer is very simple and helps us appreciate the bigger picture here. They didn't mean it. Did they mean it? My point is, there are all kinds of things we do in our life that we mean, don't mean, and not sure if we mean. They were bad now, we don't mean it. At what point do things we don't mean become things we're not sure we mean? At what point do we get used to doing things so much, we have such a habit of doing it, that it becomes part of who we are, to the point where it's part of who we are? I think an excellent example of this, you know, I heard that there's a real Ben Hazmanim coming up soon. Ben Hazmanim coming, and I heard some people may be leaving Yeshiva for Ben Hazmanim, maybe leaving Eretz Yisrael. I heard. Okay. You get on the plane, maybe you're flying El Al, you're still in Israel. How do you know? Look around. Even the American Jews act like they're in Israel and El Al. You know what I'm saying? Stewardess says, everything's all out. Okay. You get off the plane. You actually have landed in foreign soil, right? Okay. You get to passport control. You interact with your first non-Israeli. It could be a Pakistani or etc. Right? Whatever it is. You don't do it with an Englishman or an American. You interact, right? Do you belong? Are you part of this world or are you not part of that world? Which world are you part of? The challenge of life in Chutz Laretz is to belong and not belong at the same time. Right, gar b'chutz laretz, k'oved avodah zarah, kir, not kir, I don't know, right? And when a person has clear, strong values of their own, it's a lot easier to resist other people's values or the hedonism that represents a lack of values. When a person's own values become blurred or not as clear or not as much as something you stand on, it's easier to just become valueless too. And this is, of course, what Chazal mean when they tell us what, Ish Yehudi, right? We were introduced to Mordechai. Ish Yehudi. Lo yichra ve'lo yishtachav. It's more than just not bowing down to Haman. It's a guy who unflinchingly knows who he is and doesn't bend. Not just he doesn't break. He doesn't bend one bit. And this is, of course, a little bit of what Esther represents. Ein Esther Mageret Moladata Ve'etama. She's undercover. Think what her life is like in Ahasuerus's palace. Living like a non-Jew. I don't mean she ate kosher, didn't eat kosher, hatach bring a kosher food. I'm not getting into that. But living in a world where she can't express her identity as part of another culture. The question is, who are we for real, and what is our mask? Well, on Yom Kippur, we all get dressed up like angels, right? On Purim, maybe we get dressed up like ourselves. The Neish Purim is where Esther revealed herself. Not just who she was, but also what her beliefs were. Right? She took a stance in a clear way. Purim is when we need to come out of the closet. Don't quote me that out of context. So we need to reveal our true selves. Purim is when we should be real. And it's the test of drinking on Purim Adalo Yada. Right? Hamam min HaTorah Minayin, Hamin HaEitz HaZeh. Who are we discovered to be? Who do we discover ourselves to be? Where we can't make intellectual distinctions anymore. Where it's only what we really are on the inside. Who are we down there on the inside? Right? We've been acting whatever we've been acting in our lives in Chutz Laretz. We're acting whatever we're acting in our lives in Yeshiva. Who is the real me? Who is the real you? What do we really want? What are we really about? And this, of course, is the major difference between Jews and Gentiles as meant to be revealed, as revealed then, revealed in our times. The Gemara in Megillah Daf Yud Beis says, "Bayom Shvi Ketov Lev Amach Beyayin." The Gemara asks, "Atu Ad Hashtal Otav Liba B'Chamer?" Took him 7 days to get drunk. Nistamanat, right? Amar Rava Yom Shvi Shabbos Haya. She Yisrael Ochlin V'Shosin Matchilin B'Divrei Torah V'Divrei Tishbachos. Aval Ovdei Kol Chavim She'Ochlin V'Shosin Ein Matchilin Ela B'Divrei Tiflus. When a Jew gets drunk, right, when a Jew drinks on Shabbos, what comes out? The real him. Divrei Torah, Divrei Tishbachos. When a guy gets drunk, what comes out? The real guy. Yeah. And this is how Rabbi Cheskel Weinfeld explains why we add the words Kein Tiyalanu in Havdalah, and why Bechlau we say the Pasuk of La Yehudim Haisa'ara B'Simcha B'Sasan in Havdalah. It mentions light. There's a lot of Pasukim that mention light. Purim is all about Havdalah. Knowing the real difference between people so deep that it's not even the Das distinction of Havdalah. It's the basic internal distinction of Havdalah. It's the hope that we have of Kein Tiyalanu. The Pasuk is written about Purim, which is the Chag of Ad Lo Yada, which is deeper than a Havdalah that's based on Das. And that's why, hopefully, Purim is a Yom Tov where we discover our real selves, where we clarify our real selves. And obviously it makes sense that this would be something we would want to reflect on before. Welcome to the days of reflection. I would like to conclude with one last point, which I think is very important in the context of reflection. I spoke about it before, but I want to focus on it now. Mordechai has very powerful words for Esther. He is emboldened by his belief that it's possible that this is the moment that is intended for Esther. And he's very sharp with her. Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Gimel. Al tadami benafshech leimanit bit ha-melech mikol ha-yehudim. Ki im acharish tacharish ibeit hazot, revach va'atzala yamod la-yehudim imekom acher ve'atu beit avich tovedu. He flips it all over. Esther, don't think you're safe and that the Jews are threatened. The Jews are going to be safe no matter what. God has many shlichim. The question is whether you'll be safe. You are expected to act now. If you act, you'll save yourself and your father's home. If you don't, you'll be lost. Obviously, I'm Esther, like, why me? Because this may be the moment that was intended for you to take action. And Chazal explained it based on the earlier Pasuk Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. When Esther became queen, everyone was like, cool, weird. Mordechai, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'chol yom v'yom Mordechai mitalech l'fech atzar beit anashim, l'adat et shlom Esther v'ma yaseh ba. Rashi explains, Mordechai said, lo ira l'tzadeh k'tzo sh'tilakach l'mishkav arel, ela sh'atidah l'kum l'oshia l'Yisrael, l'fikachai mechaza l'adat ma yeh b'sofa. Mordechai was able to realize that Esther needed to act because he had asked the question earlier when Esther became queen. It's about being reflective about who we are, why we are where we are, and what that means about what's expected from us tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, and unanticipated circumstances in the future. This is a major part of reflection. To reflect on the one hand about our identity, that's what we've been talking about in this year, right? Who we are, especially in contrast to the world around us, which was a big Purim theme, right? And number two, to think about what this identity should imply about how we're meant to live our lives, about what decisions, about what actions are expected from us. Not by me, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why we are who we are where we are. That's important reflective stuff. This is a day to do it. If a person's not feeling well today, they should go to sleep. Right? They have some technical work to do, some mutter to do, some technical work, etc. But the worst thing in the world is to bum around. You can learn. You can reflect. Don't bum around. And Baruch Hashem, you have tomorrow. So if you want to prepare your Purim costume, you can prepare tomorrow, right? Better to prepare your Purim costume tomorrow than today. Today is reflection day. So let's reflect properly. Everyone should have a meaningful Tanis, which should lead to a even more meaningful Purim. And everyone is invited to my home tomorrow, Mirat Hashem, at 1:45. People always complain. I came in, the house was full. So I'm telling people now what time we're opening the doors. So that doesn't mean people should stay like this. But Mistama, if you're there at 1:45, you'll be able to get a good seat, etc. And if you want to come, you can come 2 o'clock or 2:30 too, but Bavakasha. Everyone's always welcome. Just I felt bad that people came in there too, and they thought, oh, I missed you. Stomach, there'll still be soup. I can't say wine, but there'll be schnitzel left. There'll be, you know, other stuff left, no matter when you come. You're welcome to come. Lunch is served at my house. I mean, the plan is that the Rebbeim, those who are going, you have Hamantash and Rogalach. I think some Rebbeim preparing more, but there'll be a full meal served at my house. Schnitzel, mitzvah, schnitzel, soup, rice, drinks. You know, we didn't have soda till today. There's soda also. For those who want soda, there'll be soda. I mean, to Shem. My custom on Purim is that, you know when you go to at the table, you have the platter of meat, you have a platter of schnitzel, you have a couple of drinks, right? This is a mishnah. So my table right down the middle is straight wine. Okay, you know, I can have some Coke, you can have some Coke, you can have some schnitzel.